Okay, let's get started.
So as you all as you all know, there is a midterm on Thursday. Yeah. So the what's the midterm going to be? So today I was going to talk about it. So the basic, I'll give you the quick overview, and then we can start talking about details. So first off, lecture questions. Here are all the lecture questions we covered. Those will be all on the midterm in some form or the other. I expect many of them to come in very, very similar forms. Some of them will, but not necessarily identical. What I tend to do is a lot of them tend to migrate unchanged, but some of them get mutated in showing up for a midterm or final, and those mutations can be subtle. So read carefully. Make sure you know the questions. Do not just memorize the answers, because the meaning of them can change completely. And a lot of them may turn out to show up in expanded form. Like, I won't just necessarily have fill in the blank. It might become a short answer question. So that's probably going to be about half, doing multiple choice, fill in the blank, true false kind of things. But then the other questions you should expect to see on the test is expect to see some number of code fragments or functions that you're going to have to give some sort of explanation. Some of them, the explanations are, so I haven't finalized this yet, but some of them will be choose from a couple of possibilities. Some will say, here are these five operations, what part of the code, where do these things happen in the code? Basically, I want to test your ability to read JavaScript code in the context of client-side systems and Node Express. If you've been doing the tutorials and stuff and they've been making sense to you, you shouldn't have a problem. If you've been slacking off and not doing them, you might be screwed. But now again, you should have been doing all this stuff because you have a project to build. Using these technologies. So if you've been keeping up, you're fine. If not, I mean, it's not going to be anything really hard at all. I'm not going to ask you for really, really subtle corner cases of how JavaScript works. No, that's not interesting. What's interesting is, do you know how things function? What the basic operations? So I can do some examples here if you want in class. We can talk about this in more detail. The other thing is I want to have some conceptual questions related to this based on how web applications and how they work. And so the trick with those is always calibrating it to what exactly you all have learned. So I like to come up with drafts of these in study sessions. So you can help me now figure out what I'm going to ask you. If you don't help me, I'll come up with something on my own. But if you help me, you might do it. So, yes?
Well, one regarding
yes.
One question related to this, like if you instantiate or if you declare an
object,
this first.
So certainly this is covered in these questions above. Remember? Remember we covered that in the lecture question. So a natural question to do is saying, okay, talking about the different invocation patterns in JavaScript, what does this mean? But I don't want to necessarily just have you memorize it. So code, well, for example, showing you an example of code and saying, okay, What does this mean in this context? What does this mean here? What does this mean here? What is it bound to? So this follows different scoping rules than the rest of the bindings. So you have to know that what this is going to mean and basically what everything else is. And of course you have to know functional bindings versus objects. Because those have a symbol can be referring to an object and that symbol has certain exposures, but when you have referring to the contents of an object, that may have different scopes because there's different names for the same object in different places. The place where I really noticed this the most was when I was trying to follow the Express framework, and you know, that was early on where I didn't quite understand the module system. Was like, what's this exports thing? How does it have exports here and then a different name elsewhere? And I was like, oh, the requires there assigns the name here, and exports is a special object that exports all the symbols. Once I saw it, I was like, oh, very nice. But you have to see things like that. So I'll be asking, definitely that sort of thing. The conceptual questions I'm more talking about is more higher level. Rather than technical things of like how JavaScript works or something, what I'm more looking at is like events. And that fact that single thread, you know, divisions between the, you know, what one question I was planning on working on was an architecture diagram of, you know, the web server, the web client, where does Node, well, first, this is kind of a simple thing. Where does Node run? Where does jQuery run? You know, if you don't know that sort of stuff, you're in big trouble.
Mm-hmm. Where does jQuery run usually?
Right. That's true. And that's very true. And that is the key thing about having JavaScript on the server, is that potentially you can leverage a lot of this code that runs on the client. But running jQuery on the server is kind of weird because there's not a DOM to talk about.
You can make one.
Yes, you can. That is true.
For image manipulation, it seems to be
the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yes?
Sorry, I have a really hard time hearing you all the way back here. Maybe it's my ears, but I can't hear you.
Sorry, I might be talking a bit more quietly today. I'm a little congested, so okay. So what was I was saying? So what we were just talking about was
You can have a DOM.
Oh, okay. So saying that jQuery normally runs on the client side because that's where you have window and document. And if you access it on the server, those do not exist, but you can instantiate them. Yes?
Could you use or usually and like just describe what like jQuery runs in the DOM or jQuery runs in the client? That's not always true. Like it usually runs in.
Yes.
So can you use keywords?
I will try to use usually, yes. But of course, when creating these tests.
Or could you not have those questions?
Well, I have to have some of these things because I try in general to put qualifiers in, and every so often I miss them. So in general on my tests, unless it's a point I have emphasized, I'm not trying to be tricky. There are a few things that I may have emphasized that, like for example, with talking about this or something, or talking about scoping or something, there I might ask you to be a little more precise in what I say. But if I'm talking about something else and you go like, well, I know a lot about this, I've done a lot of web programming, I looked at this library and I found an exception to this. The key answer is go like, do most of the people in the class have the context you do? If they don't, answer like they would answer. This is the quiet point where some of you know more than others, and that can trip you up. So keep that in mind. I care about important details, not tricky details.
You could say something like, assuming your server does not run Node, where does jQuery run?
I could do something like that, but we haven't talked about
it. Before Node was invented.
Well, I think what would be better is what benefits does running Node, running jQuery get you on the client side?
Yeah.
For example.
That would be.
And there, if it says it gives you a lightweight web server, you'll go, what? jQuery gives you a lightweight web server?
No.
He said, no, it does not give you a lightweight web server. So that's...
Without a lot of extensions.
Yeah, using WebSockets you can do almost anything, but So does that... So that... One of the things, hard things about teaching a class like this the first time is thinking about what have you all actually learned? This is a tricky thing.
Put that on the test and just see.
You must get at least three questions.
Well, what, one thing you legitimately say is what might be kind of interesting as something just to give you points for is what is something that surprised you about web applications that you learned in this class that you didn't know beforehand, for example.
What if you knew everything?
Well, no, if a question like that would be, say that, this would have surprised me if this was the first time I learned it, but I learned it actually 5 years ago. Okay. I don't think I'm going to put something like that.
No meta questions.
Yes?
Since you said previously that a lot of the lectures sort of run concurrently with JavaScript good parts, are there which sections of the text should we review just to get a better grasp of the concepts?
Okay, so basically I haven't covered anything in JavaScript the good parts past, I think, like chapter 5, I think?
3 and 4 are related to
AWS. Yeah, 3 and 4. Let me see if I can find it. What are the chapters? I mean, if anyone has a copy of it in front of them, I can. Well, I can. Actually, I have it on my phone here. Hold on 1 second. I've got it right here. You're just going to hear. It's going to be a little louder in my recording right now because I'm looking at my copy here. This is one thing I love about EPUBs. I have like 5 books sitting here just without even trying. Okay, contents. So the grammar, I'm not really testing you on the grammar of JavaScript. When you start using, it's a good chapter to read, the grammar chapter, because it's very detailed if you haven't ever looked at it, but I'm not really testing you that. Chapter 3, objects. Chapter 4, functions. Those are key. Chapter 5, inheritance. Basically 3 through 5. We haven't talked about arrays, and we haven't talked about regular expressions. There might be some stuff in methods and style, but that, those haven't been the focus. I would like to talk more about regular expression and arrays and things. We talk more about data representation and stuff, because when we start talking about databases, really what we're talking about is, okay, you're representing data for your application. What are the different ways you can do it? This is the ways you do it in memory. This is how you can do it as a persistent store. This is basically my main topic I want to cover after the test. So that will start after reading week. Yes?
When you're talking about inheritance of prototype
objects.
Right,
exactly. That's what I was saying, chapters 3 through 5. If you understand the stuff in chapters 3 through 5, you understand the weirdness that is JavaScript compared to the languages you've had known beforehand pretty well. So does that... Okay, that good question? So, let's go here. Make sure to review chapters 3 through 5 in JavaScript, the good parts. Now, of course, the key points are covered in the questions. I mean, that's stuff that you shouldn't have known from just looking at the lecture questions. Yes? Because I got most of the points covered in those chapters in the questions, I believe. Catch up on jQuery stuff. So remember, the other big book I said was JavaScript: The Definitive Guide. Now, JavaScript: The Definitive Guide is giant. It's a very big book. It's a nice book to go to when you're going like, how the heck does that work? Because it has so much in it. But of course, also the other book on Node specifically is that Learning Node book that I pointed you out, which is really nice. There are online stuff for Node, but that I found it really nice. It also covers Express and everything in it too.
Is it
so
the same as building applications with Node and Mongo?
No.
That's a different one?
That's a different book. I have a link to it on the resources. Yes? I expect you to know how to read code. That's fundamentally what I want you to have gotten out of the lab and out of the project, is that you can navigate your way around and have a clue about what things do. Because everything else you can look up. But if you don't have an idea of what the semantics are when you're looking at a bit of code, you can't say, well, I know what this does. Oh, there's a routine. I need to go figure out what that does. What are you going to do? You know, so... for example, I'm not expecting you to know everything about CSS and HTML, but I am expecting you to know that, oh, here is some HTML. Oh, here is some CSS. Oh, here is the JavaScript that connects those together. Like, we went through these examples now with, you know, some simple client-side stuff. And in the most recent tutorial, you have a little bit of Ajax stuff. I'm not going to test you on Ajax specifically, but hopefully that... But you should see the basic concept there. But like, you know, HTTP, GET, and POST, the idea of headers, the idea of forms, having how data standard passed back normally by forms. You know, we've seen all that. We've talked about cookies. So things that you've seen, I expect you to know a little more detailed than the stuff that we just more talked about. Yes?
I can expect the HTML CSS syntax, but what about the Jade syntax?
No, I'm not going to test you on Jade. Jade is useful, but it's not. Besides, really, Jade is so close to HTML.
Oh, I just worry, because you did it a couple of times. You did it in class and then in lab, and it was just really annoying.
Well, one of the reasons why I wanted to do that was I think Jade is useful, but more importantly, if you're going to translate to Jade, you actually have to understand HTML in some sense, in the sense of it being this hierarchical structure of nodes, and you have to understand how that maps. You can't just do copy-paste. The mapping is simple, but it's key. So that's one of the reasons why I kept Jade in there was, can you switch representations? Because if you can switch representations, you kind of understand basically what's going on underneath. Or at least the form of it. So, having the basic structure, if you've been understanding stuff in the tutorials, if that's been making sense to you, if the stuff I've been talking about in lecture has been making sense, you'll do fine. I don't expect this to be a hard test. I'm not trying to make it a hard test. If you've been having problems, been feeling lost with pieces of this, then you probably will have some issues, and you should be asking questions right now about things that puzzle you. Because in some sense, this is a little bit of an experiment, as this whole class is, but this particular experiment is the fact that I have not been giving you assignments to force you to learn some of these details. I've given you things to play with, and I've given you directed questions that from lecture that if you felt lazy, you could have just gotten the answers from me directly or from your friends and gotten through the quizzes and gotten 100% and not learned it. So I've given you guideposts. But using those guideposts, you should know how you're doing.
As far as the coding on the midterm, you can understand what was done.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. If you understood what was happening in the tutorials, you're fine. If you didn't look at the tutorials, you're going to have problems.
Are we going to handwrite anything at all? Like,
handwriting code?
Yeah, like going in lines to check if things work at all or no?
You'll be filling in. It's like, okay, here is this. This is missing. Stick in one line.
Oh.
I mean, it's going to be like that, not writing entire functions. I don't like writing entire functions because then I have to read entire functions to figure out how to grade them. And that's hard. So I figure you're going to figure out how to get full programs together because you're building a project. That's the print. I mean, or you don't have a project. Then. Yes? That's between you, your stamina, and your ability to get this stuff. I mean, I don't think anything in the tutorials has been particularly bad, and I think the concepts we covered in lecture are there. But again, if you have not been touching JavaScript up to this point, and you've just been kind of like, oh, I'll do that later, you're going to have problems. I haven't been just kind of telling you to do this stuff because, oh, yeah, you're just like, you're supposed to be learning this stuff. So, some of you will be able to pull this out of your ass better than others, okay? I can't speak to exactly which of you will do better or not, but. So this, in some ways, is diagnostic, and if you really flub the midterm, do not panic, because I normally figure out some way for you to make up for it later in the semester, one way or the other, so. In general, in my classes, if you demonstrate mastery at some point, you're going to do fine. Well, if you demonstrate mastery and you haven't been slacking off, like, for example, if you just haven't bothered to fill in the quizzes, I mean, come on, I'm giving you points here. You know, some people, you know, there's been a few of you who have done that. But, you know, it's like, if you do that, that's... Sorry. Yes? I haven't talked about it. These are, again, things, the reason why I gave you the book JavaScript, the Good Parts, and say read it. It's like, these are good things to keep you out of trouble when you start programming it, but it's all quirks. It's not fundamental. It's stuff that you learn it, you'll be a better programmer, and you won't give yourself so much trouble. But if you don't, I mean, you still, it's your own pain. Yes, and again, I haven't discussed that. That's actually a great kind of. If this was a pure JavaScript language course, I would love to talk about kind of issues of equality, which is actually a really interesting language design issue of like why you have different kinds of equals. Use triple equals; it just does the right thing. If you know that as a heuristic, I won't tell you about why and you know what exactly the different kinds of equals are actually doing. But use triple equals; you're done. You know. Search for double equals, eliminate it from your code. You know, but there's like these, you know, this was JS Lint is for. So my goal is not to make you the best JavaScript programmer in the world. I'm trying to teach you about web applications, that JavaScript is key to understanding web applications, but I have larger fish to fry. So that's why I'm not kind of emphasizing these sort of details, but I care about things like inheritance and objects and scoping, because those are fundamental to the language and they're really different from the standard language you've covered. So
the falsy and truthy stuff, that's what you were just saying.
Yeah.
And just in a very quick,
yeah.
Is it similar to in scheme the EQ?
It's exactly the same.
Okay.
And you want to use equal. Not EQ. Because EQ is the fast comparison. Equal says that for computational purposes, from a functional point of view, that they're equivalent. Yes. So. Mm-hmm.
So let's say we have a web application with node, connect, and express. Which one of those
So, let's draw a diagram. This actually is probably a good thing to discuss. So, for those of you in my operating systems class, let's have seen it before. Well, this will look familiar, otherwise. No. So, if we're talking about a computer, we're talking about hardware. We're talking about kernel. And then we're talking about applications, which are processes on top of this kernel. When you talk about system calls, they're making calls into the kernel, whatever. So you're running processes. When you run a regular application, you're running a process. Where is Node, Express, and Connect?
It's a process.
How many processes?
Four.
One. So there is a node process. What is Connect and Express? It's JavaScript code. Huh?
Middleware.
Well,
whatever
that. Middleware is a reference to how things are organized. Middleware is a convention for putting code together so you can use other code with what. So you can mix and match code. It's a strategy for doing components more than anything else. So, or interconnections. So, the executable you are running is the node executable. It is written in C. It is compiled. It is a binary. It is a runtime environment for JavaScript. Everything else we've done, we talked in this class, is loaded into that interpreter. Connect is JavaScript that's loaded in there. NPM is JavaScript that's loaded in there. Connect is JavaScript that's loaded in there. It's one interpreter. And it does everything. That's what's cool about it. So if you work in the Lisp model, if you ever heard of Lisp or Scheme or Python or whatever, Node is that. It's the interpreter, the runtime environment. And everything else, it turns out this runtime environment is flexible enough, you don't have to escape it for much of anything. Everything you want to can be written in that language, and written in that language, it is plenty fast. So this binary here, Node, has a key bit of technology in it that makes it wicked fast. So part of Node, the major part of it, is something called V8. Really what this is Node is V8 plus some libraries for connecting to the underlying OS. And V8 is a JavaScript runtime built for Chrome.
By Google,
yes. For those of you who don't know, Chrome is from Google. Everyone knows that, right?
I think it's pronounced Our Masters.
Our Master. Yeah. Now, not to say that V8 is the only good JavaScript runtime. There actually are others. For example, Firefox has their own. You know, Microsoft has their own. These are all very fast runtimes. But it just so happens V8 is very good, and it's easy to embed, and it is embedded.
So
there. Now, V8 is associated with something, with another package known as WebKit. What?
Did you say WebKit is packaged in V8? Is that what you just said?
Kind of. WebKit and V8 are kind of separate projects. We normally get WebKit and V8. I think V8 is part of the tree, the build tree now of WebKit, or is it? I mean, it's a.
Safari actually
uses
V8? I thought WebKit came with its own JS library. This may be completely wrong.
No. This is what I was wondering, is I think, WebKit definitely has its own JavaScript runtime, and I think it now the default one is V8.
Okay.
Because what often happens is there's been so much competition in runtimes, there's been different ones. So I just don't know what's in the current WebKit tree. Logically speaking, V8 is developed separately, but it's co-developed with WebKit.
But WebKit is more important.
So what is WebKit?
Browser.
It's a renderer. It is a page renderer. It is the whack of code that takes HTML and CSS and turns it into the bitmap that you see on the screen. It is the heart of the web browser. And basically, how your web browser behaves depends on what rendering engine it has. If two browsers have the same rendering engine, they will show web pages in a very, very similar manner. So Safari and Chrome both use WebKit. In fact, WebKit was first, WebKit was originally KHTML, which was a library developed for the KDE project for rendering web pages. Apple took it and said, this looks good, but we need to make it better. And they did, they forked it, and they created WebKit, and that became the heart of Safari. Google said, oh, that WebKit's pretty cool. Let's use it for Android, and let's use it for Chrome. And so it turns out WebKit's been used all over the place. Most other web browsers, they use a random web rendering engine, they use WebKit. But it started with Apple. Competition for that is Firefox. Firefox has their own rendering engine, Gecko. And that's not so easy to embed, although they're working on it. So you got
So as far as the official WebKit website is concerned, they still use something called JavaScript Core.
Okay.
And that is used in Mac OS.
JavaScript Core is the one used by Safari?
Yeah. And just like the Mac operating system.
It's integrated in there. That's interesting because I know Safari actually has a fast runtime engine. I don't think that one is very fast. Well, they might use that for the core one, and then Safari might use a different one. Things in web browsers change fast. It's hard to keep track of who uses what. That's good to know. But V8 is rendering engines traditionally included their own JavaScript runtime, but then people realize, wow, we need faster JavaScript. And so separate projects emerged to just work on JavaScript runtimes that would integrate with different engines. Taking V8 and integrate it into Mozilla's renderer or into Internet Explorer or something would be difficult. But it's really because those things expect different ways of JavaScript being set up. But for WebKit, it does. No, this is a long way of saying that these are the things that you're building on top of. When you're writing on the server, you're running on a JavaScript runtime with Node. When you're going to the client, you're often talking to the same V8 engine, but associated with it is WebKit. And so all the stuff when you talk about the DOM and accessing different parts of the page and CSS and all the things, that's coming from WebKit. Running on the client. Right, so yes, and then you say.
If you go back to the same diagram, would it be correct to redraw Node and show that Connect is on top of Node and then Express is on top of Node?
Wait, Connect is on top of Node and Express is on top? Yes, except it's very hard to represent layers in something like JavaScript. It's all kind of mushed together. There isn't a clean layering. There's not a clear type separation. It uses them. I mean, Express uses Connect, and Connect uses routines, but it's more of a parallel use kind of thing as opposed to this is on top of it. It actually extends the objects because it can add methods to it. So it's a subtle point, but it's just because it's not strongly typed, you don't get the nice layering that you do in other systems.
So basically,
which is a feature, I actually think. But.
So if you want to add resources on the same diagram, let's say database or whatever, you just show it as connecting to Node.
Right. Exactly. Whatever abstraction you're using inside there to access your database, that's a separate process, potentially running on a separate computer. Whether you're using MongoDB or you're using using MySQL or whatever, that's a separate thing. which we've talked about somewhat. I want you to understand the basic architecture of this, but I'm not going to test you on exactly how that happens. We've got to go through SQL here in this class, so this is stuff to cover for the second half. Basically, I see the second half of this class as being lots of topics. So I'm hoping at this point you kind of get the basic web application thing together.
Quick questions. IE, entirely different world, not WebKit, not V8?
Yep. Internet Explorer, Microsoft has their own thing. It's called Trident, is their renderer. I don't know what the name of their JavaScript engine associated with it. Do you know the name of it? It is pretty bad, but yeah.
And you said npm is written in JavaScript?
Yep.
So even though you execute it separately, you don't actually need to do node npm. It just like a little shell that passes it to node?
So what's really great is if you look at the if you look at the Windows install of node, it makes this all really clear. You just download the node executable if you want to, as opposed to the installer. And when you download executable, if you want to use npm, you grab the zip file and unpack it in that directory. And what it has is it creates a little .cmd file, which just calls node with the right arguments.
It's not as transparent in Linux, so
it is if you look at there's shell scripts that do it.
Yeah.
If you look at it. You just have to know about things. But I'm saying if you know Windows, you can just see it all right there.
There seems to be two ways to install it, and having done it once on Ubuntu, having compiled it, there is a way that you have full access, you never need to sudo, and if you actually follow the basic instructions, sometimes you run into this, like, I don't want to do it, so you sudo, and if you sudo during install, you sudo every time you use npm.
Yeah. When you install it by default, there's a global versus individual install. It has to do with which module. Actually, the way node works is really simple in terms of the modules. It's just looking for that node modules directory. But it can have multiple ones of those. And so which one you install it in depends.
This is sort of...
Now, all the stuff I'm talking about is not... I'm not going to directly test you on this. But it's more, this should hopefully help you understand the things we've been talking about and how they fit together.
This is sort of on a different topic, could we sort of go over exactly like how JSON is used in a web app? Because it's a way of
right. So first off, what is JSON? Anyone? It's a data format, but it's a really simple data format if you know JavaScript. It's just the object notation. That's it. It's open brace, identifier, value, identifier, value, identifier, value, separated by commas, close brace, semicolon. That's it.
Quotes are enforced, though. Quotes on the members.
Oh, okay, yeah, because otherwise you get the reserved word things and stuff. Yeah, so you have some quotation. But No, but the idea of JSON is it's a subset of JavaScript. It's just the notation of JavaScript in a restricted environment. Now, the original idea of JSON was that to transfer data into a JavaScript implementation, basically the server wants to send data into the client. If the client's going to use it as a JavaScript object, so just send it a JavaScript object. You send it a file, run eval on it, and you have the objects. Done. Now, then realize, well, actually, this is a really simple notation. We can use it for languages that aren't JavaScript, and how do we generate it on the server and stuff. So it's become a general interchange format. So JSON is a competitor to XML for communicating between the client and server. It's just a data format. The big difference between them is XML has all this overhead about saying how it should be structured, and it's very verbose and everything. JSON is essentially JavaScript objects, with a standardized notation so it can be used in different environments. You don't need a full JavaScript interpreter to read it. The really big reason people use JSON, though, is it's not just that it's simple to parse. and simple to pass around, it also bypasses certain security protections that the browser has. By default, you can only load XML from the originating server. You can load JSON from anywhere on the internet. That's useful and scary. And we will talk about these security issues more later. Yes?
Do we have to know acronyms?
You have to know the vocabulary. So I don't need to know all the acronyms. What acronyms are you wondering about?
Ajax, although it's kind of easy.
I'm not going to ask you to expand acronyms. That's just annoying. Especially since most of the time, acronyms are really, you know, what is it called, backronyms or something? They're really, the words associated with them came later, or they changed over time. So, I can go over specific questions. Yes.
You very quickly mentioned CGI.
Yes.
And sort of. Is that still at play at some level in the client-server interactions, or?
So if we're talking about this CGI thing, is the traditional way CGI was that one process would be Apache, the other one would be Perl, and CGI would give you a way of calling those. So it would be outside of the process. Then later, CGI evolved to being something you could do in process. Well, actually, no, I take that back. CGI normally is out of process. There's the other extension mechanisms for browsers which allow you to do it in process. And the reason why this matters is because if you're starting up an external process, so every time you get a web request, it kills your performance. Because you have that extra overhead of running a new program. So for this class, though, and way things are moving, is that instead of having this whole big heavyweight web server that you call external programs from, this thing can do everything. That's what Node is. It's one binary that can do everything. And you want web server functionality? Include the modules you need. And don't include anything else. You have just the functionality you want. I mean, it's trivial to set up in almost everything you generally want. I don't really see the purpose of running, if you're running a real dynamic web app, why do you need something like Apache normally? I mean, it can come in handy if you want to do things like caching and other, there's various other things it does, but if you're fully dynamic, it can potentially do everything for you. I mean, it's Apache's around for historical reasons, as much as anything else. The world is moving.
So is CGI just used to make threads from
It's normally not threads, it's normally processes. There's no shared memory.
Okay. So like, for example, if your web server is running like PHP or something,
mm-hmm.
is CGI required to run it?
You can, I think, do PHP through CGI, but you normally don't. Normally it's included in the process in some way.
So PHP...
And PHP is, what I mean is a PHP interpreter is not run on every request. There's a PHP interpreter that's started by the web server and just stands there beside the web browser and it's giving requests.
Yeah, like it used to be that there would be a web request and it would actually route it, oh, it's Perl script, run Perl, the script, take the output. Don't do that anymore until it's
Now, if you are feeling like there's a lot of stuff to know about web applications and you don't know most of it, you are correct. You don't know most of it. This is why I've been trying to guide you along a specific path. This is why I've given you all these lecture questions. This is why I've given you very specific examples to look at in tutorials. Say, learn this. Have some idea about the rest of the universe, but learn this first. It's not to say this is the only way to learn web stuff. I mean, honestly, I could have taught you a course where this whole time I was just teaching you HTML and CSS.
That would be web development. That would be web design.
Well, this is... When I say fundamentals of web applications, I'm really teaching you what I think is the CS fundamentals of this area. And to be successful in this, you're going to learn a lot of other bits, pieces. But hopefully I'm showing you that given what other people have built, you don't have to know all the details. That's what's wonderful nowadays. There's all these really nice components that if you understand these computer science fundamentals, you know how to put them together and let them deal with the details for you. Hold on one sec. The same people are asking me questions. I'd really like some other questions from other people because, I mean, I would like to calibrate this test. You know, otherwise I'm... You should know about closures. I haven't covered currying.
Can you review over closures?
Happy to. These are the kind of questions you should ask. So when we talk about a closure, you should first think about its purpose. And its purpose comes from one thing, which is lexical scoping.
I want to erase this.
Anyway. Lexical scoping. What I mean is when you have a bit of code, you want the meanings of the symbols in that code to be determined by the text around the code, not by when it is run. So, this... it does not matter, this issue of lexical scoping is not really a big deal in a language like C. It's a big deal in a language like JavaScript because functions are first-class objects. So you have a function here. Then we have so in here let's say so what am I doing here? I'm calling a function here, I'm having another function here that's being defined in the function, and then I'm returning this as a result. So when I call foo, I get a result of bar. Now, let's say I create x equals foo of 5. What is x? X is a function. X is bar, a specific instance of bar. So now I later go, and let's say also out here I say a equals 2. Now if I say x of, let's say return a plus b. So here I say a equals 2, I then say x of 3. What will this return? Hmm? 8. So I said 5 here, 5 is bound to a here, so the meaning of a here is this, the meaning of b here is this, so this will be 5, and this will be, so this comes in as 3 here, b, 3. And then A is 5 from here. But notice, A is not 2. If there is another kind of scoping called dynamic scoping, where any functions, any symbols that aren't bound within the context of the function itself come from the current environment. So if we didn't remember this scope, we would have just returned a function here, and this function would have evaluated saying, oh, what's inside this function and anything? No, A is not defined in here. So you have to look outside of it for A is defined. But where does it look? Does it look in this global scope here, or does it look here? Because by doing this, we actually have to remember this context. We have to remember that foo had these certain bindings when it was called this time. If we don't remember that, we can't possibly have A have the right value. We would just grab whatever value of A happens to have right now. This is what I'm saying. It's determined by here that it was called in this context. We're remembering this as opposed to being called here. Does that help? That's what closures is about. That's what closure is. It's closed.
What's an X3? I don't understand that.
So X was assigned this, result of foo. What does foo return?
Bar.
What is bar? It's a function. I'm calling bar. I can't see the name bar here. Bar is not in scope. Bar is a private thing. Any symbols binding is defined in the scope of this function only exist inside that function. The only reason we can see this function outside of it is because we returned it. This is the whole way JavaScript does data hiding.
Just changing the function name from bar.
Well, it's more than changing the function name. It's that I am returning a function. Which has no name. The function is separate from the name. Names can refer to anything. And functions is one of the values, just like an integer or whatever. It's returning this function, and we're giving it the name here of foo, of x. And then we're calling it here. Yes? The easiest way to think of it is it's a key value store. It's a hash table. And there is in particular there's the chains of them that are stored. So the typical way this is referred to in 3007 when you talk about this is these are environments. And this is an environment model. I've been trying to talk about this from a more practical point of view, as opposed to kind of more theoretical, but basically this is the environment model of scheme. Same thing. Okay, real quick, well, yes?
I think to help clarify for some people, could you explain if you wrote foo, open bracket, I, close bracket, and then open bracket, three, close bracket?
Ah. Yeah, you can do that. So foo.
Nice if you wrote it all out.
So if I said five, and then you're saying, call this. What's the syntax again? I just forget this. You do this and you need to do. Okay. So I'm invoking the return value. Syntax like this, I like to keep the names around. I get confused. So. Okay, so the issue with this is it's a bit glitchy in JavaScript. So this kind of thing is a very functional language kind of structure, but JavaScript is also object-oriented. So what do objects look like? The objects are you take an object, which by default is just empty braces, and that empty brace you can now associate with it various key values. So, for example, once I have this object here, that you notice the use of curly braces here? There's kind of a deep connection here.
Treat that like an object?
Functions are objects. Yeah. Yeah. In some ways it's kind of syntactically overloaded because you can't quite do the same thing, but there is a conceptual unity to this use. So,
both first class
object. Yeah. I'm trying to think what the right term is. There's a terminology of using it's a first class entity in a language. But when we say it's a first class object, then we're talking about object oriented. Anyway, what we were trying to explain was this. I'm trying to explain this. So you're in a function here. Now, let's say I want to make bar, well, let's say I want to make foo, specifically, a method. I have a function. I want it to be a method. The way you want to do this, so let's say some object y. Now we're going to put this up. So let's say we have an object y. Let's say y, we'll start it off as the empty object. Now I want to define a method for it. So I now say y dot, we'll say y dot foo equals foo. So I don't, these two names, I'm writing this just because it's convention. Like, well, let me just give you a different, just to keep things less confusing. Like this foo2 equal to foo. So now foo2 is another name for foo. This is now a method. Now, if I want to call this is a method, that means I need to be able to refer in the function to the object to which we're referring to. So we'll say, I now want to say y dot foo 2 sub 7. If this is a method, that means in the code of foo, I need to be able to refer to y. That's the object we're working with. How do I know what? But how do I refer to it? I haven't passed it as a parameter. But I have implicitly. This is object-oriented magic. Here is that y is a parameter to this function. It comes as a parameter this. This now exists in there, and so I could have said I could do stuff with this in there. I could have, for example, made, now I could do things like this equals this dot A equals A. So now I've now created a property of the object that we just created, which is now A, when I run this. So that can kind of almost as a constructor there. So after I invoke foo, after I do this, now all of a sudden I can say y dot A has a value, where before y dot A did not have a value.
Given that new definition, if you were to do a functional invocation, this dot A would be
Wait, let me first finish what I was trying to explain here, and then I'll. So, the problem comes with this. So, this has the expected meaning here. What does this mean inside bar?
Global.
That's the glitch.
Oh, it doesn't carry that now.
It doesn't carry at all to nested functions. Broken. That's it's broken. There's no other good way of doing it. It's just wrong. Inside bar, we'd be assigning it to the global object.
So there'd just be a new A.
Assigned to everywhere.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's like blah.
So that's where you want this equals that. Right?
Exactly. So what you do here is you say that equals this. That will automatically be in scope. Because you're defining it, when you define a new symbol in context of a function, it is limited to that functional scope. Oh yeah, you should do var, right, sorry, yeah.
Despite the fact, or other than the fact that it will put you into an asylum, could you do var this equals this?
No, it's redefined on every scope.
Oh, right, because this isn't a
It's not a regular variable. You can't just do assignments to it, because it can get redefined. So this will have a different... So if you do that, now that will carry over into the scope and you can use it. So for helper functions that are nested, basically your private methods can't access this. They have to access it by another name, or that, or self, or whatever, but you're giving it another name. It's a glitch in the language. Yes?
I don't get that. Why did do this dot A equals this? I mean, in the previous thing, why, what you said that Y dot, Y of 7 or whatever,
mm-hmm.
We're actually, Y dot A was basically Y dot Y was bar?
Yep.
So,
no, no. So,
let's.
Y is the empty object. We then give what we assign, give Y a method.
So foo2 is now foo.
Exactly, but in the scope of Y. So this, by doing this and invoking it in this, it's the same function, but now we can invoke it as a method, and when we invoke it as a method, this has a particular meaning. And the meaning of this is Y. There. It's only because we've invoked it this way. Are you, okay.
So foo 2 of 7 is basically the actual foo you're calling and parameter 7 is basically A.
Yes, exactly.
So foo Y is basically what? Y is the object and now Y is the bar?
No, no, no. Y is not. No, we haven't reassigned Y at all. It's returned this function. We didn't do anything with the return value.
Yeah, but actually, now we haven't called anything as bar. But actually, the return bar is going to Y.
No, no, no. We haven't assigned it to anything here. We didn't. We have not given a name to bar. When we called this, I would have to say. I could say. You know. I could say. B equals.
Oh, that would be.
And now B would be bar
okay.
In that context.
Now why did you do this dot A equals A?
Because if I did by doing that, now all of a sudden Y dot A is defined. Before A did it did not have a parameter A.
Oh.
It didn't have a property A.
And what?
Well, it doesn't exist. It wasn't defined. A was in the scope of function, yes?
If you don't call foo as a method, what does this refer to?
If you don't call foo as a method,
yeah.
Then, so this is what I was talking, the details of the four ways. So there's the apply way. What? If you call it in a functional context, it refers to the global object. So you're talking about calling just foo up here? Like, yeah, right, exactly. So if we just call foo without anything else, it's a global object. Yeah, so that's. So this is where if you're going to be using this and you want to, and you might be not using it as a method, you might want to check to see what this is.
So if we didn't want to assign a method to Y,
mm-hmm.
foo2.
Yep.
But we wanted to say this dot A equals A. Would we say apply?
You don't use this if it's basically the
yeah,
only time it makes sense to use this is when you're using it as a method of an object.
Yeah, but instead of those two lines. Just say, like, you don't want to assign an object, could you say apply Y and then.
Yes. Yeah, you could. Yes, you could. Yeah, that's exactly right. And apply sets. When you run apply, you can specify what this means. Because the idea is that apply lets you take a random method and apply it to a different object that it may not be a method of without actually making it a method of it. Yes?
If you take a bar that. That inside of say that dot A or whatever inside of bar.
It'll carry over, yes.
Does that change the Y dot
exactly.
A?
Okay. Because objects are passed by reference. So it is the same object, you're just having different names. Yes?
If instead of B you did Y dot B, would then this refer to Y?
Wait, instead of B you did Y dot B here equal
yeah.
to this?
Yeah.
So then I would have the bar would become a method
inside,
of Y.
Yeah.
No, no, not, not inside, the inside bar, if I said y dot b equals
yeah.
y dot foo here,
yeah.
then now I have a method y dot b.
Yeah.
And in fact, you're right, in that context, this would be defined to y also. Yes. So then you wouldn't need it. But you notice then it's a public method.
Yeah.
Public methods get this. Correct. It's the whole thing when you try doing data hiding, private methods, when you start doing this limited scope, that's when you don't. That's when it breaks.
I seem to recall that when we first talked about this and we got to the constructor way of calling, you frowned upon it. You said it wasn't.
Yes.
But now that I've done a bit of poking, it seems to be used everywhere.
That's why you should use... it's used because a lot of people don't think of JavaScript in the right framework. Frankly, it's there. It's kind of... It's ugly. I mean, it's an opinion. I mean, it's an opinion. There's nothing technically wrong with it, but it's just that when you do the whole constructor thing, you've got the prototype, and you call the constructor or the prototype. It's like you don't have to use the new keyword at all. That's basically what it's saying, is what the new keyword does is a bit of stuff behind the scenes which you don't actually need. And when you try to understand the semantics of it, it's confusing. When I can just do everything...
Yeah.
Except if I do it this way, I can't pretend I have classes. I actually have to face up to the fact I only have prototypes.
So
if I want to pretend I have classes, new works great.
Is there a way of forcing the other libraries that I use?
You don't care what they do internally. Don't look at them.
But they say... The API says, hey, to use this, you new sprite.
You can do it otherwise, yes. But it's, if the API says use new, then sure, just follow what they say. The real problem with new is you can call it without new. And then it starts modifying the whole thing. So if they say use new,
you better use it.
And by convention, those are started with capital letters.
Yeah.
So that's one way you can check it, but yeah. It's just ugly, but it's there.
So the four ways, the functional, where this is global, the method invocation, where this is the object
mm-hmm.
that the method
right.
is of,
right.
apply, you specify this,
yep.
and the fourth one is...
Constructor.
Constructor.
The constructor way, the key thing with constructor... The big thing with constructor is this gets pointed to a new object, a new empty object.
And it's returned.
And it's returned for that.
Oh,
that is,
okay.
You don't have to explicitly return it.
So I
you don't
can
have
say
to.
Like y equals open brace, close brace, and then apply y, comma, constructor.
I think so. I checked that because it's this whole because it's not the constructor, you call them the prototype and then it calls that constructor, so it's a little more annoying. Yeah, so it's Yes.
There was a function in the tutorial that started with dollar sign.
Yes.
Can you just recap a bit?
That's jQuery.
Oh. Is it
dollar by convention nowadays is jQuery.
Is it calling a test?
What?
Does it call on a test? As some sort of question?
I wouldn't test you specifically on what dollar is, but I might use dollar. So again, this gets into the reading code. So you should know when you see dollar, it's talking about jQuery. And it's just a shorthand because you're calling jQuery all the time, and so you might as well assign it to that. And dollar and underscore are two of the symbols that you can assign. And you'd use a normal symbol.
So you would use dollar when you're going to say like dollar dot whatever method. So you're just calling a method of the jQuery.
Well, normally you don't call a method of the jQuery object. You just call the jQuery object and it returns an object. That's what you work on. You only need to call the methods of the jQuery objects that are returned as opposed to the global jQuery thing because you're querying it. You're getting something back, and then you call the methods on the thing that's returned.
It's jQuery.
Yeah, it's jQuery. Yes. It's just a name. There are no... Symbols have no types in JavaScript. Symbols can refer to anything. If you have a symbol... Point at whatever you want. Dollar just happened to be taken over by jQuery because it's so useful and used everywhere and it's become the standard thing.
Oh, so
it,
could I use like at?
No. That's not one of the symbols that you can do. At is dollar and underscore, right? Are the two?
Yeah. And
underscore is taken by the underscore
library. Okay.
You underscore dollar sign.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, that's true. I think dollar can be used inside of us.
Some libraries use dollar.
Yes. But again, these are all conventions. But the nice thing is, with the way you, if you structure your code correctly, it doesn't. These conventions don't matter. Whatever meaning you want it to have in your code, it will have.
In the good parts, it briefly leads to how horrible the global assignment is. That you know anything bar is automatically global.
Yep.
And says that one way to get around that is to define your own global objects into which you stuff things. So at least then you've kind of insulated it
from the yes.
Right. So is that? That seems to be like a bare workaround. You're still completely publicly accessible. Should we be gunning to write things in a more functional way?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so objects then become storage?
Well, you're doing object-oriented functional programming. There's nothing wrong with using objects and methods and stuff like that, but when I say so normally functional programming is thought of as, how do you say it? You don't mutate things. Everything's immutable. Of course, in JavaScript, objects are mutable. So it's fine to go ahead and mutate objects. You know, but again, it's really objects are just another way of doing a namespace. So it's not that much of a cheat.
Just, I think it might just be wording about when you were talking about jQuery, but jQuery, the thing we get back from the require or whatever, the dollar sign, is that a function or an object?
It is a function. All functions are objects.
So functions
have methods.
Overload. Like in C++, we'd overload the function call operator and get a function.
There is no overloading of operators.
Right. So if I make an object and then, if I just put code in there that isn't something colon something, it's then that code will get executed if a function call it. Can you, like...
Yeah, I know. When you call it, you define other methods in the function. If you call those methods, you call them, but there's methods in the function. Alexei,
It is worth noting that while saying var underscore dollar, you have restricted characters. If you're using the actual object notation with quotation marks, you can actually have any Unicode string in there. So you can have the table flipping guy emoticon or the Unicode snowman. That's totally valid key for an object.
You just put it in quotes. That's true, but of course, that's not true. I don't think for variables. It's only true for object attributes.
Yes,
that is one difference between them.
When you said functions are objects, everything is an object. So they're first class entities, and thus they are objects.
Yes.
And so, say you define foo over there.
Mm-hmm.
Later, you can say foo dot. Whatever.
Yes.
And assign it.
So think of it this way. If I have a function, I can actually give the function metadata.
Right.
By taking the object and assigning properties to it.
And that would be in scope, like within the.
The scope of the object is wherever you can access the object, its methods are accessible. If I have a name for the object, I can access all of its properties, including its methods and its values.
I'm just wondering, so say you define foo, mm-hmm. and then you add it to it a property of foo bar,
mm-hmm.
let's say. Inside the definition of foo, can you do this dot foo bar? And, well, actually, no, it wouldn't be this, because that would be global.
See, this depends on how it's called. See, that's the thing. This is going to depend on how it is called. That's what makes this annoying.
So basically, you could have, like, if you gave,
like foosome attributes, you could actually have then have foo be called in a context that relates back to its own attributes.
Yeah. Yeah. This is where Java, this is where the flexibility can get kind of mind-blowing, but it's really useful. And that's what, and this is where I call powerful computer science ideas. And it used to be, all this stuff was like the stuff that artificial intelligence researchers loved, and all these weird Lisp hackers and stuff, and it's freaking running in all of your browsers. It's the, I mean, this is the language of the web. This is what everything is built on. This is, you notice MongoDB uses JavaScript for stored procedures. You know, GNOME is talking about using JavaScript as the main language for the desktop. Qt uses JavaScript for embedding things. Mozilla and the Firefox OS and stuff are using JavaScript. I mean, JavaScript is everywhere. Yeah, Qt Quick. You can build Qt applications in JavaScript. It's important to know these kind of things because it's everywhere. Anyway, good luck. Hopefully after you take the midterm, you might actually understand some of these things better. I find midterms can be learning things, but don't stress.
Don't stress.
Don't stress.